the syllabus. A syllabus is a Latin word for sort of a list. And probably comes from the Greek originally, actually. It's sun labos, and also sun begins with a bringing together. So a compilation, you might say, a compilation of errors. It was published together with, or very soon after, Quanta Cura. And it really made a splash. I mean, the Pope really did not make himself popular with this. Ooh, no way. And the syllabus has been ever since what you call in Latin a pons asinorum. I don't know why it's called that. Literally, a bridge of asses. It's a Latin expression for something which, in American, you talk about sorting out the boys from the men. This is a real sorter of the boys from the men. I mean, anybody whose Catholicism is sort of halfway or shaky, they're straight into the circular fire with the syllabus. But anybody who really understands his faith knows that this is it. This is the faith. If you've got a book about Catholic doctrine and you want to know whether it's a good book or not, just look up syllabus in the index of the book and see what he says about the syllabus of errors. If he likes the syllabus, it's a good writer. If he doesn't like the syllabus, you can be sure he's a liberal. So the syllabus is a litmus test. Pius IX syllabus of errors is a litmus test of whether somebody thinks like a Catholic. So it made, I think I told you this morning, that all the governments at the time threw up their hands in horror and said, oh, well, the Pope doesn't really know what he's talking about. He's just that silly old man in Rome and so on and so on. That's what the Protestants said anyway. The Catholics would have been more gentle the way they put it, but came to the same thing. It wasn't popular, but it has been, it's a landmark in modern times of Catholic doctrine. It was like a stake driven into the heart of the 19th century. I mean, it just hit right on the money and bang on all of the errors that everybody was circulating. And of course, the modern world has gone this way ever since, and the modern world has landed itself in the mess that it's got into because the people didn't listen to the popes. But the popes did their duty, and they saved their soul. Pius IX undoubtedly saved his soul by telling the truth. So it's a great single collection of most of the significant errors flying around, most of the errors of liberalism, quite simply. They are a collection of the principal errors of our day which have been condemned in the consistorial allocutions. You don't want to go through this thinking that this is Catholic doctrine. You've got a slight problem if you... These are errors condemned. So this is in red print, not in green, okay? This is what the bad guys say, and the good guys condemn this. It's neat. Would have been condemned the consistorial allocutions, the encyclicals, and other apostolic letters of Pius IX. He's been Pope now for 18 years, 46 to 64. He's made a number of speeches and written a number of encyclical letters. There's quite a lot of water gone under the bridge since he's been Pope, and therefore he's quoting himself. Of course, all his documents had said these things, but never had all of these errors been pulled out and put together in one clear collection like this. The idea, I think, originally came from a Spanish writer, Donoso Cortes. I think the idea came from Donoso Cortes, who was a very great Catholic writer. It was from Spain, around the middle of the 19th century. And the idea, sort of the 50s, and it made its way until finally they came out, Rome came out with this under the guidance of the Pope himself. And it's been, as I say, a landmark. You know, the proverb says that the hit bird flutters. And another proverb says, if the shoe fits, wear it. When this came out, there were birds fluttering all over the place, just like Humanae Vitae of Paul VI in 1968, the encyclical on contraception, artificial means of birth control. And there were hit birds fluttering all over the place. Everybody agreed that the Pope was wrong, but, you know, practically everybody agreed the Pope was wrong, but this is still here, and most of them have disappeared. So, this is the rock. This is the rock of Peter, and the rock of Christ. Each of these prepositions is erroneous and condemned, and because grammar wrong, does not reflect the true teaching of the Catholic Church. Right, let's first look at, there are 80 propositions. Go all the way to 80, and 80 is quite famous. Start with 80, just for fun. The Roman pontiff can and ought to be reconciled and come to terms with progress, liberalism, and modern culture or civilization. Okay? And that's what everybody is saying. Everybody in the world is saying the Pope has got to get with it. The Pope has got to move with the times. Rome has got to modernize. The church must update. The faith has got to accommodate the modern civilization. You've heard it so many times. This is number 80 at the very, very end. You've heard it so many times. And the Pope Pius IX says, no, the Pope does not have to move with the times. The Pope does not have to hitch up his skirts. The Pope does not have to stop Vatican II. The Pope does not have to compromise with the modern world. The Pope does not have to say, modern guys are really nice guys. Zilch. Well, 80. Now, that's a good one to conclude on. It's not a weak conclusion. It's a good, tough conclusion. But look at the main title. So, for instance, what I mean is this. The first section is pantheism, naturalism, and extreme rationalism. Those are errors in doctrine. Okay. On the second page, as you've got it, section 2, error number 8, moderate rationalism. So, errors 1 to 7 are the extreme doctrinal error. Errors 8 to 15, 14, are the moderate doctrinal error. You may remember we have Pelagianism, and then the Pelagianism, the church defended itself, so it was followed up by semi-Pelagianism. The error at half-cock, just like Vatican II is followed up by Cardinal Ratzinger. Cardinal Ratzinger is the same error, but half-dose. So, you know, it looks a lot better, it tastes a lot better, but it's still poison. We went from Arianism to semi-Arianism, Pelagianism to semi-Pelagianism, and here you've got pantheism, extreme rationalism to semi-rationalism. Now there's a moderated rationalism. Which is worse? Has anybody got an opinion? Why the moderate worse? Yeah, that's it, exactly. The extreme is blatant, that the semi is more dangerous. It's closer to Catholicism, but it's more dangerous precisely because it's closer. Cardinal Ratzinger is more dangerous than the way-out wackos of Vatican II because he's that much closer. He looks like a nice guy, talks like a nice guy. He's poison. Right, moderate rationalism, section 2. That's 8 to 14. We then come to indifferentism and latitudinarianism. Those are two words you may not know. Firstly, indifferentism. It is indifferent what religion you belong to, or what religion you believe in. Meaning it doesn't matter. It's a matter of indifference. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't matter what religion you belong to. That's indifferentism. And the Pope condemns it, of course. Latitudinarianism comes from the word, Latin word, latus, meaning broad. So start with the first three letters. Latus is broad. Latitudo is breadth. Latitudinarian is somebody who believes in breadth, and latitudinarianism is the error of believing in breadth. In other words, latitudinarianism is the opposite of being narrow-minded. Latitudinarianism is, in English you might call it broad-mindedness. The Pope condemns broad-mindedness. In matters of truth. I mean, every mathematician condemns broad-mindedness when it comes to 2 and 2 is 4. There's only one answer to 2 and 2. I mean, suppose somebody says, 2 and 2 is 4. No, 2 and 2 is 6. I tell you what, let's compromise. 2 and 2 are 5. Yeah? No. 2 and 2 are 4, that's it. That's the Catholic truth is like that. Jesus Christ is the Son of God. He isn't half, he isn't one quarter, he isn't three. He is the Son of God, meaning he is God, period. Finish. Catholic doctrine is closed. It's open and closed. It's shut. Chesterton once said something very wise. He said, I always thought the mind was something like the mouth for eating. You only open it in order to close it again. Very wise. Meaning, just like in order to eat, you only open the mouth in order to close it and eat, so you only open the mind in order to receive truth. Once you've got truth, the mind closes. Once I've learned that 2 and 2 are 4, I'm not going to open my mind to it being anything else ever again. Or once I've understood Pythagoras' theorem, I'm never going to think that the 2 squares on etc. are anything other than equal to the square on the hypotenuse. Okay? And it's, once I see truth, the mind closes and the issue's finished. And I'm not going to be broad-minded on things that I know are true. That's it. So, he condemns indifferentism and latitudinarianism. We move on to section 4, socialism, communism, secret societies, biblical societies, clerical liberal societies. These pestiferous organizations have been often condemned in the gravest terms. He doesn't even go into it. But he refers you to where he talked about them. Biblical societies are pestiferous organizations. Wow. You might have thought people putting out Bibles all over the place, putting Bibles in all the motels are good guys. The Pope says they're pestiferous. Because, of course, they're Protestants. The Pope understands that heresy is grave. The poor modern world doesn't understand that heresy is grave. Poor modern world thinks just so long as we're a nice guy, just so long as I believe in Christ or think that Christ is a nice guy, just so long as I believe the Bible, we all believe in the same God. That's the idea. No, we don't. No way we don't. All right, 5. Errors concerning the church and her rights. That was a good deal of what we were seeing this morning. A long section, 19, 20, 21. Look at 26, for instance. The church does not have the innate and legitimate right of acquiring and holding property. You see, this denial of the right of the church to enter into the temporal or secular or lay world, or act in the lay world, own property. Error. The church has got the right to own property. All the way through 28, 33, all the way through to 38. Then we move to section 6. So those are errors concerning the church. 6, errors concerning civil society, both in itself and in its relations with the church. So errors concerning the state. Errors concerning the church. 5, a lot of errors. Errors concerning the state. Again, a lot of errors from 39 all the way through to 55. 55, again, is not a weak conclusion. That's one of the famous propositions of the syllabus. The church should be separated from the state and the state from the church. Error condemned. Now, practically every American believes with his mother's milk in the separation of church and state. Error. The separation of the state from the Anglican church, yes. The separation of the state from the Hindu church or whatever, yes. The separation of the state from the Catholic Church, no. Every state, by its nature, it's a creature of God, coming ultimately from God, by its nature, ought to work with the Catholic Church, which comes from God, which alone comes from God. Therefore, every God-created state, leaving aside the sins and errors of man, is by its nature bound to work together with the God-created Church, and there's only one. They're made to work with another, like husband and wife are made to work with one another, like body and soul are made to work with one another. Church and state are made by God to work with one another. They're not meant to be separate. And interestingly enough, even F.D. Roosevelt talked to Cardinal Spellman. Ronald Reagan talked to Father DeBoer. These Masonic presidents or godless presidents, say what abusive things you like about these American presidents. When it comes to real life, they are all of them in some way or other talking with the Catholic Church. They have to. They need to. They sense the need to. And it's not just that they have to get the Catholic vote, although of course that may easily be most of it. But there's cooperation comes back. They get rid of cooperation out the front door. It comes back through the back door. Take the slums of New York. Who are the police's best friends? And who do the police, most of the policemen know are their best friends in the difficult parts of New York City? Answer? The Catholic priest. For sure and certain. The police know that they're friends, and that's down-to-earth grassroots being practical. Forget about the principles and the ideas, but there's cooperation of church and state. Because the priest needs the protection of the policeman, and the policeman needs the counsel, the help, the influence that the priest has over the people. It makes life much easier for the policeman if the priest is with him, and the other way around. Cooperation between church and state, union of church and state, is the most natural thing in the world. And it just happens, even with your Masonic governments and your Freemasons in government. They find themselves willy-nilly working with the church. That's the way it is. So, the church should be separated from the state. The state from the church is an error, a grave error. Mark you, it's not only, once again, it's not only the dear United States. When Archbishop Lefebvre entered the seminary in Rome, that must have been way back in the 1920s, the French seminary, he's told us, he always used to tell us, that when he entered the seminary, he believed in the separation of church and state. And it was only when he studied the popes in the seminary that he realized that the separation of church and state was an error. So, hey, it's the most normal thing in the world, in today's world, to think that state, church and state should be separate, but it's not normal. It isn't normal. It's the normal thing, the right thing, is for the state to work with the Catholic Church, not with any church, not with the Anglican Church, but with the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church should work with the state, and it's natural for the two to cooperate. It's not unnatural, it's completely natural for the two to cooperate. And even here in the United States, where the union is condemned, it tends to come back by the nature of things. Seven, errors concerning the moral law, Christian and natural. Section 7. Errors 56 to 64. Here, we've gone from doctrine to morals. And that's the usual process of the popes, to go from doctrine to morals. Because morals follow on doctrine. Doctrine doesn't follow on morals, morals follow on doctrine. Again, that's something that people today don't understand. People today say, it doesn't matter what you believe in the way of doctrine, all that is important is that you behave yourself. And as long as everybody behaves themselves, it doesn't matter what they believe. What you believe controls how you behave yourself. If you don't believe there's a hell, why should you, if you really don't think there is a hell, which is a question of doctrine, there is a hell, there isn't a hell, is doctrine. If you believe there is a hell, it makes a lot of difference how you behave. If you don't believe there's a hell, it makes a lot of difference to how you behave. Therefore, doctrine, if you believe that Jesus Christ is God, it makes a lot of difference to how seriously you take what he said. If you believe he isn't God, it makes a lot of difference to how seriously you take what he said. Morals every time follows on doctrine, and not the other way around. People today think, again, that's the weakness of the modern mind. It thinks that action is everything and principles are nothing. Therefore, morals are everything and dogma doesn't matter. Not true. Not true. When Pope John Paul II came to the United States, there was a cartoonist who commented on his visit. And the cartoonist apparently made a series of five or six little pictures of the Pope. And the Pope, the first image said, Pope quoted the Pope. It showed Pope John Paul II saying, "The Catholic religion condemns abortion." Second image. "The Catholic religion condemns divorce." Third image. "The Catholic religion condemns contraception." Fourth image. "The Catholic Church condemns homosexuality." Fifth image. The Catholic Church condemns, again, it was some moral question. And then sixth image. "The Catholic Church says you can belong to what religion you like." In other words, the cartoonist was smart enough to have picked up that when the dear Holy Father comes around saying, you mustn't do this, your holy religion says, you mustn't do this, you mustn't do that, you mustn't do that, you mustn't do that, but you don't have to be Catholic, he was just cutting the ground clean from everything it had said about morals. It's absolutely true. When the Holy Father, following Vatican II, preaches religious liberty, he undermines everything he says about Catholic morals. Unless he claims that some of those moral principles are from the natural law. I caricature, I exaggerate, undoubtedly if you said it to him himself, he would deny that that's what he's saying. But the cartoonist picked it up, and it's true. He goes to the Mohammedan and he says, you worship the same God as we do. He goes to the Protestants and he says, Luther's a good guy. He goes to the Anglicans and walks up and down the aisle with the Archlayman of Canterbury. The Archlayman of Canterbury. Yeah? And, I mean, all of these people said, well, why should I be Catholic? Why should I listen to what he says? If what he says disagrees with my religion, why should I listen? Here he is showing that my religion is as good as his. Why should I pay any attention to his religion? He's a nice guy. I'm a nice guy. We're all nice guys. So let's all hold hands and have a party with him because that's what he wants. Got nothing to do with the Catholic religion. Of course. Of course. The Jews are our older brothers, etc. I mean, you know. So, morals depend upon doctrine. In any sane way of thinking, in a Catholic way of thinking, morals depend upon doctrine. You see, people say, ask this question about John Paul II. Why is he so good still on doctrine while he's not so good on, why does he uphold these moral questions while he's so weak on doctrinal questions? My answer is, look at some of those old trees. There was back in Ridgefield a little while ago, there was an old tree. They cut it down since. The stem was rotted out. It still stood quite tall. But each spring, the lower branches at the ends would still produce leaves. There was still enough gas in the tree to produce leaves at the extremities. But the middle was rotted out. And it was obviously simply a matter of time before the rot in the middle would, there would become a spring where there'd be no more leaves on the end of, on the end of the branches. In other words, that's morals and this is doctrine. If your doctrine is rotted out, it's simply a matter of time before your morals rot out. Morals are the outer branches of doctrine. And so your doctrine's got to be strong and healthy for the rest to be strong and healthy long term. If you rot the doctrine, the morals will hold for a little while, but not for long. And that's exactly the state of this Pope. The relic, his position on women priests, God bless him, on homosexuality, he's strong against it, and against the moral points on which he is still strong, God bless him for every single one of them. But the heart is rotten with his religious liberty and his ecumenism. The heart is rotted out. It's simply a matter of time before those strong points of morals rot out, as the cartoonist in America very well realized. Those moral points don't rest upon anything. There's no substance there because there's no doctrine behind it. Therefore, that's why Pius IX, who is Catholic, has gone into doctrine at length and then only arrives later at morals. Errors concerning the moral law, Christian and natural, 56 to 64. Again, section 8, a particular key point of Catholic behavior and morals, Catholic marriage. A point particularly attacked by the Freemasons, and therefore several errors, 65 to 74. A particular point of attack, because the Masons knew if they can destroy the sacramentality of marriage, if they can stop marriage being a sacrament, if they can persuade everybody that marriage is just a civil getting together, a civil law, it's going to be easy to pull it apart. If they pull marriage apart, they pull the family apart. If they pull the family apart, they can pull society apart and they can pull the individual apart. So the attack upon the family is a key part of the attack upon the church. Therefore, the popes, regularly through the 19th century, in several of their encyclicals, again and again, they're defending the sacramentality of marriage. Catholic marriage is a sacrament. It's one of the seven sacraments. It's one of the seven sacraments, which means Catholic marriage is a source of sanctifying grace. Catholic marriage, the Holy Eucharist is a source of grace. The confirmation is a source of grace. Catholic marriage is a source of grace. Wow. Honey, you're a source of grace. Ooh. I mean, that's quite something to think of. Tonight. Wait till tonight. Okay? Catholic marriage is a source of grace. It's one of the seven channels of grace. The church, that's how much value the church attaches to marriage. Well, the devils know that if only they can pull apart marriage, they can pull apart everything else. Therefore, they go for marriage. At this time, they were going for Catholic marriage tooth and nail. Of course, they succeeded in pulling it apart. Now you've got annulments, and Catholic marriage's annulment has simply become a Catholic way of divorce, that's all. It's tragic. It's very grave. But if only Catholics were taught and knew this doctrine, One, they might take more care who they marry in the first place, but two, once they marry, they will rely upon that sacrament as a source of grace, and they will know. They live with any other woman, and not only do they lose a source of grace, not only do they pile up sin, they lose grace. To know that it's a channel of grace is a powerful incentive to stay with one's lawful spouse. Errors regarding Christian marriage. Practical points, not too difficult. Finally, errors concerning the temporal sovereignty of the Roman pontiff. Again, the temporal means comes from the Latin word tempus, time, as opposed to eternity. So temporal is opposed to eternal, worldly, this worldly, as opposed to next worldly. So the word temporal means the sovereignty in this world. We might say political, we might say secular, there are various other words we could use, but the supremacy, the sovereignty, the rule of the Pope in even in this world, let alone his control and influence in the next world. Therefore, a final few errors, 75 to 80, and very interesting. Let's just, it's coming, starting back to front, but let's have a look at these errors concerning the Pope to begin with. 75 to 80. I've already looked at 80. 75. The children of the Christian and Catholic Church are at variance amongst themselves concerning the compatibility of, concerning whether a Pope can have spiritual power and worldly power. So the Masons gain divide and rule. They're saying some Catholics think that the Pope may have worldly power, but other Catholics don't think he has worldly power. The Pope says, division amongst Catholics be blank. We are all of us agreed the Pope has the right to exercise worldly power. There's not division. This is, there's Catholic doctrine. This is what Catholic thinks. Stop pretending that we're divided. 75. 76. The abrogation of the civil authority which the Holy See enjoys. In other words, if we were to chop the worldly arms off the Pope, it would be in the highest degree conducive to the liberty and happiness of the Church. In other words, all that the Church, how often do you hear this one? The Church is corrupt because it has worldly power, too much worldly power. Have you heard that one before? The Church was wonderful until Constantine, and then the Emperor Constantine made the Church worldly, and the Church has been corrupt ever since. Error. Gross error. Gross error. There was sin in the Church before 315, and there was plenty of sanctity in the Church after 315. The high point of the Church was when the Church, the great age of the Church was when the Church enjoyed most temporal power. The 1,000 years of Christendom, and that's undoubtedly when the Church sent most souls to heaven during those 1,000 years. Because there were sinners in the Church. God had to send Saint Francis to bring his churchmen back to poverty. They were too rich. But, despite the abuses, that was when the Church created Christendom, when the Catholic Church created Christendom, and when the Catholic Church was sending the largest number of souls to heaven. Because basically her secular power was being, a worldly power, was serving a spiritual purpose. That's all it is for. Obviously the Church has no interest in politics as politics. None at all. Politics is politics. But politics, in order to make sure that the government is run in such a way as at least not to obstruct the salvation of souls, that's the Church's business. Or to actually help the government to save souls, that's the Church's business. It would not help the liberty and status of the Church to destroy her worldly power. It wouldn't. 77. At the present day, it is no longer advantageous that the Catholic religion should be considered as the only religion of the state to the exclusion of all other forms of worship. Notice the error. Notice the error. Again, it's a weasel error. What's the weasel phrase, anybody?
At the present day.
Oh, yesterday, of course, everybody agreed that Catholicism is the only religion. Of course, yesterday, everybody acknowledged it, and it was excellent, and it was very good. But today, we've grown out of that. Yeah. It's that past. That's when everybody was peasants. But now we're the 19th century, and we're getting technological, we're getting scientific. So, at the present time, you can't go on pretending that Catholicism is the only religion. Huh? See? See the little bit of perfidy in there? At the present day, it is no longer advantageous. Of course, it was yesterday, they pretend. They pretend to admit that it was fine yesterday. Just like all of these modernists today. Catholic doctrine, oh, of course, Pius IX, oh, I believe every word of it. Of course, it was wonderful in its day. Won't work today. Nah. See, the gross error is, that's a bunch of junk. The perfidious error, oh, it was wonderful in its time. But today, you know, see the difference? Just pretending to recognize that it was once good in order to destroy it the more effectively for today. No way, no way. These are, Catholic truth is truth, true yesterday, today, and forever. So, it's an error to say that it is no longer advantageous to treat the Catholic religion as the only religion of the state and to exclude all other forms of worship. No, says Pope Pius IX. It is just as advantageous today to say that as it ever was. And it's just as damning to souls to say the opposite as it ever was. There's no change. The liberals pretend that things have changed. The liberals pretend that the modern age makes eternal truths different. It doesn't. 78. Accordingly, it is a matter for commendation. We should commend it. We should admire it. We should praise it when, in certain Catholic countries, the law has provided that foreigners who come to live there should enjoy the public exercise of their particular form of religious worship. No, that's an error. So he's saying, the error says, we should admire the get-with-it governments that now allow Protestants to practice Protestantism in public in our country. But the Pope says, no, it's not good. In Spain, after the Spanish fought the heroic crusade of the 1930s against the communists, the state was absolutely Catholic. And the state lived, the Spanish state operated on the old principles, the real religion, operated on these principles. Then came Vatican II, and it's Paul VI who told the Spaniards that they must dismantle the Catholic state protection of the Catholic religion. And so Franco, with death in his heart, began to dismantle the state protection of the Catholic religion. Franco was right, and the Vatican was wrong. Crazy Vatican II, Paul VI, absolutely wrong. Things haven't changed. Heaven and hell haven't changed. Truth doesn't change. Heresy doesn't change. The nature of Protestantism and its ability to send souls to hell hasn't changed. And here comes the Vatican telling a Catholic state to dismantle its defenses. Incredible. But that's how it is. The result is that today, in Spain, the name Franco is the dirtiest word you can mention. Incredible. All of the intellectuals, all of the elite, all of the leading classes, Franco, they almost spit. The little people, the ordinary people, know that under Franco, things were much better in Spain than they are now. But all of the leading classes, gone. Gone, gone. It's as though the crusade had never been fought. Your leading Spaniards today are ashamed of what their ancestors did in the 1930s to kill communism. They're ashamed. Incredible. So, in Spain before Vatican II, Protestants were forbidden to practice in public their false religion, so were Jews. And that was right. Absolutely right. Because that prevented Catholics from being contaminated. Now, it's the Vatican that's told Spain to dismantle that, and you get these Protestant sects. The Protestant sects have broken loose in Latin America. In Latin America, there are something like 10,000 souls a day turning Protestant. 10,000 Catholics a day becoming Protestants. Extraordinary figure. I don't know the exact figure. Hundreds of thousands, millions of Catholics have gone Protestant in Latin America in the last 10, 20, 30 years since Vatican II. Give you a little story somebody told me about Rome and Pope John Paul II. Pope John Paul II was at a meeting of Brazilian bishops. This is a fact of history. I'm not just a fact of a few years ago. He was a meeting of Brazilian bishops and he was talking about ecumenism, as you know, what his plans for ecumenism, the year 2000, Mount Sinai, and so on and so on. A little Brazilian bishop, an insignificant Brazilian bishop, a young insignificant Brazilian bishop stood up and said, Holy Father. And he began to explain what was going on in his diocese. He said, Holy Father, in my diocese, the Catholics are turning to Protestants. They're all becoming Protestants. What are we doing about this? What can we do about this? The Holy Father listened very benignly, very kindly. They listened. And then when the little bishop sat down again, within a minute, the Holy Father was back on his ecumenism, Mount Sinai, the great more forward movement to the blending of all religions, the reuniting of religions. Just the grassroots problem of Catholics losing the faith and going over to Protestant just went in one ear and out the other. The Pope is in a dream. He's possessed by a great dream of bringing all men together in the one world religion, making Catholicism into the one world religion. And nothing will stop him. Don't trouble me with facts. I'm not interested in facts. It's tragic. That is his state of mind. It's tragic. Anyway, so that's what this same error was nailed, you know. It's been nailed all down the history of the church. It was nailed once more, solemnly, in the middle of the last century by the Pope. What Pope Pius IX, Pope Pius X, Pope Pius XI, Pope Pius XII, they all stood by this doctrine. But with Vatican II, they joined the liberals. So the church held down to Vatican II and then off it went. 79. It is false to hold that the granting of liberty to all religious denominations and the complete power granted to everybody to manifest outwardly and publicly all opinions and views of any kind more easily brings about the corruption of morals and ideals among people and spreads the pest of indifferentism. Okay. If it's an error to say that that's false, then it's obviously true. So the Pope is saying, it's true that liberty of religion and liberty of speech corrupts the people. And it's false to say that it doesn't. Right? So 79 is again against religion, against freedom of religion, and against freedom of the press. Absolutely against principles that most everybody today takes for granted. And finally, 80, the Pope can and ought to be reconciled and come to terms. In other words, the Pope ought to get with it. No, says Pius IX. The Pope has got no business to be getting with it. Getting with it is not the Pope's bag, you'd say today. It's not his business. The Pope's business is to stand by the doctrine of our Lord Jesus Christ and not to change one jot or tittle of it and to stand by the doctrines of all his predecessors and not to change it. Well, tell that to the liberal popes. All right, let's go back to the beginning. We've seen then the structure, the overall structure of these errors, how they're classified. Extreme dogmatic error, moderate dogmatic error, dogmatic error in practice, in other words, indifferentism, and then particular errors on the church, on the state, and then we came to morals, that was 56, error concerning morals in general, errors concerning marriage in particular, which is a particular, very tender point of morals, and a very much attack point, and finally, errors concerning the Pope, which enabled him to conclude with number 80, the Pope has got no business to be getting with it, nor does any Catholic. Alright, come back to the beginning, because then, if the Pope's order is right, the most important section will be the first section, the dogmatic errors of principle, which are behind the error in practice of latitudinarianism, and then behind all the particular errors, and then the moral errors. So the first section is the most important. Number one, notice what number one begins with. There exists no supreme being. In other words, God doesn't exist. Number one is a biggie. It's huge. There exists no supreme being, perfect in his wisdom, his providence, distinct from the universe. That's to say that God is the world and the world is God is pantheism. The pantheism is the Greek pan everything, theos God. Everything is God. All creatures are God. This stick is God. I am God. The book is God. We're all God. Everything is God. That's pantheism. The Pope says the supreme being is distinct from the universe. If the whole universe disappeared tomorrow in a puff of smoke, the stick, the book, me, you, everything, God would still exist. That's what a lot of people today don't believe. A lot of people believe in a mushy kind of God who's no different from the book and the stick and everything else. But the real God is quite distinct from the universe, which is his creation. And if the whole creation collapsed into nothingness, the real God would still exist. That's not what people today think. God is identical with nature. That's pantheism. Consequently, he's subject to change. That's heresy. There's no possibility of changing God. God is unchanging, eternal, infinite. Absolutely and totally unchanging. St. James says it in Scripture. God is evolving in man and in the world. In other words, God is somehow involved in the world, and as the world evolves, so God evolves. Heresy. All things are God, pantheism. And they have the very substance of God. Pantheism, heresy. God is one and the same thing as the world, and therefore, since God is spirit and the world is matter, then there's no difference between spirit and matter. Consequence, anybody, any consequence of there being no difference between spirit and matter. In that case, materialism is completely spiritual. In that case, going down to the bar and drinking is an act of religion, of spirituality, exactly. Hey, let's go and get drunk, guys. See the consequences of saying that that God is nature and nature is God. In that case, spirit and matter are just the same. Everything spiritual is material. Everything material is spiritual. That's Teilhard de Chardin. That's these modern delinquents. And then what happens? Oh gosh, what happens to marriage when you say something like that? Oof. Everything material is spiritual. Necessity and liberty. There's no such thing as liberty. There's no such thing as liberty. Hey, guys. We haven't got free will. In that case, anybody? Go down to the bar tonight because I'm not in control. I haven't got free will. Let's go and get drunk. Boy, it always ends up with, let's go and get drunk. Let's eat, drink, and be merry, and everything else. Truth is falsehood. It's true that I shouldn't get drunk. True is equal to falsehood, therefore it is false that I shouldn't get drunk. Therefore, there's nothing wrong with getting drunk. Down to the bar, boys. Always into the same conclusion. Good is the same as evil. It's good that I shouldn't get drunk. Good is the same as evil, therefore it's evil that I shouldn't get drunk, so let's go and get drunk. And justice is the same as injustice. Same thing. The total confusion. If you blur... So that's number one. That is the most basic error of all concerning the existence or the nature of God. Principles matter. Dogmas matter. Try telling modern people that. They don't think that ideas matter. They don't think principles matter. They don't believe the dogmas. Dogmas, come on, get away with your dogmas. We don't need dogmas. Your dogmatic church. They don't understand. The poor things, they just don't understand. Bad dogmas, yes, get rid of those. But the true dogmas, we absolutely need true dogma in order to go to heaven. How on earth will I behave myself properly in order to die in the state of grace, in order to be sure of going to heaven, if I don't believe what the Catholic Church teaches? If I don't believe what the Catholic Church teaches, if I don't believe dogma, I'm not going to behave myself. If I don't behave myself, I'm going to go to hell. I need dogma in order to go to heaven. Please give me all the dogma you can, as long as it's true. Well, if the church defines it, of course it's true, because you've got the church's backing. Therefore, there was a wise Englishman in the 19th century who said that, he was a convert, I think, W.G. Ward, I think his name was. He said, I wish, people were complaining, that there was too much dogma, and that there was too much to have to believe. He said, I wish there would arrive a new dogma on my breakfast table with a copy of the Times every morning. Meaning, the man had understood, dogma is a safe playpen for the mind. The dogma gives to the mind security of truth. Any sane mind is delighted to be protected and guaranteed in its grasp of truth, because truth is what the mind is for. The mind is not for wandering around. The mind is to open in order to close upon truth. The more somebody gives me of guaranteed truth, the happier I am to take it in. Therefore, if a new dogma, if the church, of course the church doesn't, because it's not a wise thing to do. It's not necessary. But this man rightly said, if the church came up with a dogma every morning, I'd be completely happy. Because I would be more and more guaranteed in possession of the truth. I'd be more and more sure, as long as I just was of good will, of going to heaven. Two. So that's the very nature of God. Here's two is the action of God. Any action of the part of God upon men in the world must be denied. So God is shut out of the universe. God doesn't act. The error says that God does not act upon men in the world. It's, in other words, God is a kind of clockmaker. He wound up the clock. He built the universe like a clock. He wound it up, and it's been going ever since, but God doesn't interfere. God hangs back and does nothing. No way. Error. Human reason. Here's the rationalism. So we've seen the pantheism. Now here comes the rationalism. The rationalism is from the word that ratio, meaning reason. It's an exaggeration of human reason. It says that human reason alone can arrive at all the truth. Human reason does not need revelation to does not need God to reveal his truth. Human reason is the exclusive judge of truth and false, of good and evil. God should be left completely out of account. God has got nothing to say. Reason rules. My reason is king. My reason can tell the truth, and I don't need God. Reason is its own law. Notice again, firstly, this is typical. Firstly, reason is the measure of truth. Secondly, reason is the measure of law. Again, notice, truth is a matter of dogma. Law is a matter of morals. Therefore, as reason is the measure of truth in the area of dogma, so it's the measure of law in the area of morals. As usual, the Pope is making morals follow dogma, which is absolutely true. Reason is its own law. By its own natural resources, is sufficient to procure the good of men and the peoples. Men don't need God in order to make the world happy and prosperous. Human beings on their own can do it. Error. Grave error. Four. All the truths of religion have their origin in the natural vigor of the human reason. Dogmas, that God is three and one in three, that our Lord is really present, really truly and substantially present in the Holy Eucharist, all of these things come from human reason. Baloney. Absolutely false. And hence, reason is the sovereign guide by which man can and ought to attain to the knowledge of all truths of every kind. All we need is reason. John Lennon said, all you need is love, and here the heretics, all you need is reason. We men can hack it on our own. Grave error. Divine revelation is imperfect. That's a blasphemy, number five. And so it needs to continually be improved. Who by? By us men, of course. We started with the doctrine of the Trinity, but we men are going to improve upon that. We're going to have a quadernity or a quinquinity. We need a quinity or a etc. We need five persons in the Holy Trinity. That's going to make it more interesting, and so on and so on. You know, dogma needs to evolve according to our human reason. Insanity, blasphemy. Six, the faith of Christ is opposed to human reason. And divine revelation is not only useless, divine revelation is even injurious to the perfection of man. Who's this? Who does he think he is? To tell my reason what it ought to accept. Who does he think he is? Almighty God, to tell me that he's three and one in three? How dare he? I say he's only one, or I say he's four. How dare he tell me that he's three? I don't accept it. Why should I? Blasphemy. The faith of Christ is opposed to human reason. That's an interesting one. There are various errors. But the relation between faith and reason, very important. Let me use black because I think it's clearer. The relationship between faith and reason. You can either say that the Catholic religion is just faith. It's a nice, sweet little cloud up in the sky. That's sentimentalism. Or you can say, number two, that the Catholic faith is just a neat little row of building blocks. That's rationalism. My mind accepts that doctrine and that doctrine and that doctrine. It builds up these doctrines, and that's the Catholic religion. There's nothing in the Catholic religion that my mind doesn't grasp. Now, more subtle error. A third error. That the Catholic religion is both nice little blocks and a sweet little cloud in the sky, faith, reason, but there's no connection between the two. That's the way a lot of people think. In other words, faith on Sundays and my reason controlling everything Monday to Saturday. Mondays to Saturdays. We could call that modernism. That's the way a lot of people today treat religion. This separation between Sunday and the rest of the week. The separation between real life and religion. Religion is a very nice, sweet thing, but it has nothing to do with real life. It's got nothing to say in real life. What's the real relationship between faith and reason? Catholicism, let's put it in green. Catholicism is like this. You have got truths of the faith which you build up like building blocks. That's reason. The reason has got its word to say in the Catholic faith, in our religion. For instance, you can argue to prove that God exists. You can argue to prove that Jesus Christ is God. You can argue to prove that the Catholic, Roman Catholic Church is the church, the one true church founded by Jesus Christ. But the faith goes way beyond that. The faith goes way above reason. But there's not a cut between the two. Faith is perfectly in harmony with reason. Reason, rightly used, is perfectly in harmony with faith. Reason doesn't get up to the ankles of faith. Faith goes way above reason. But faith does not contradict reason. Faith, true faith and true reason are in perfect harmony with one another. So that is Catholicism. But the heretics are constantly again, of these three errors, which is the subtlest and which is the most dangerous? Number three, yes. If you didn't say that religion is just for the matter, just for the mind, people say nonsense. Of course religion isn't just for the mind. If you say religion is just sentimental, well, yes, a lot of people believe that, but still, any man who's got a mind, anything of a mind says, no, religion, but there's got to be something in the mind for the religion. Ah, well, and of course, religion is for the mind and for the heart, but the two are completely distinct. So there are true, this is science, and that's religion. Deadly. Deadly error. Deadly, deadly, deadly error. Because it makes religion unscientific, then since science is true, religion is? Exactly. Religion is untrue. That's a deadly error, and very common. How many people take science seriously when it's a matter of truth, but they just don't put religion anywhere in the same category? It's just not. No, they are absolutely in the same category. Nothing true according to reason can be false according to the faith, and nothing true according to the faith can be false according to the reason. There can't be two truths that contradict one another. If science or reason really has got hold of a truth, then it's in line with the faith. It won't be out of line with the faith. If it is out of line with the faith, like the scientists who pretend that we don't all come from two ancestors, from just one couple, that's against the faith. We know that it's false because it's against the faith, whatever science pretends. On the other hand, if the faith says that something is absolutely true, again, science has got to fall in line. Because there can't be a truth of religion which contradicts the truth of science. One of them can't be true. Truth can't contradict itself. Therefore, the faith of Christ is not opposed to human reason. Divine revelation is not useless. Divine revelation does not injure the perfection of man. On the contrary, if you give a young man the faith, it greatly helps his reason. It greatly helps his reason to straighten up. On the other hand, if you corrupt a young man's reason by sending him to one of these lousy modern universities, it does deadly damage to his faith. A man has one mind, and if you bend the reason in it, you'll bend the faith. And if you straighten out the reason, you will straighten out the faith. If you bend the faith, if you corrupt his faith, you will also corrupt his reason. If you straighten out his faith, you'll straighten out his reason. The two work together. Every man has one mind made for one truth. And you can't separate science and religion. They can't be separated. They're distinct, but they're not separate. They're quite distinct. There's no way in which they can be separated. And anything true in the one must be true in the other. Galileo question, oh boy. Boy, well, it's, you know, you need to look at it carefully. But there's no way in which there can be two truths that contradict one another. No way. Seven. We'll finish here. The prophecies and miracles set forth in religion and Holy Scripture are poetical fictions. Oh, thanks very much. The mysteries of the Christian faith are the sum total of philosophical investigations. In other words, it's the philosophers who worked out the Holy Trinity. In the books of the Old New Testaments are mythical inventions. And Jesus Christ himself is a myth. I mean, that's just obviously, it's just horrible blasphemy. But that's, again, what a lot of people think. All right, well, those are the main errors. We'll come to the diluted errors, which are more dangerous, and we'll move on through the other sections. It won't take us too long.